back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5, 34 minutes after the hour. Real quick preview of what's to come tomorrow. Alabama Department of Corrections Commissioner Jeff Dunn will be with us. We also are slated to be joined by United States Senator Doug Jones. Our usual Friday guest, April Marie Fogle from Alabama Today, and State Senator Chris Elliott. Jam-packed show, as it tends to be these days, a lot going on in the news. So hopefully you can make it and tune in tomorrow. But joining us now is a pleasure to bring on my next guest. Could be with us Monday, but has made time for us today. State Representative Matt Simpson in studio with us. Matt, how are you?
Doing well. Had to miss Monday because Labor Day, so I look forward to being back with you next Monday on a regular scheduled time.
You have a good Labor Day.
We did. Family did well.
That's always good. Good to hear. You keep it up with obviously the presidential race. We don't talk when we have our discussions here much about national politics, but it's on everybody's radar. What do you think? How do you feel about November?
You know, I feel relatively like it's kind of deja vu all over again from 2016. I think people are way overconfident on where Joe Biden stands based on these polls. And I know you're not a big proponent of national polls, and you and I've had this conversation, and it doesn't matter with the popular vote. We don't have a winner take all system on this. It matters on the individual states on a state by state basis. And it's all about that number 270. It's the race to 270. And just because Joe Biden wins California 95-5% and has that huge margin, it doesn't necessarily translate across the country that Joe Biden's going to win. I'm optimistic, and I'm hopeful that we have four more years of President Trump.
Well, you know how polling works, and the sample sizes, and who they pick to be, who gets more weight in the poll. I've always thought the models these last several election cycles have been a little off, a little bit because they rely on historical data from the two Obama elections, which I don't think are applicable anymore. Much different candidates, but also that people. The politics of the country has shifted in a way, particularly on the Republican side. It seems to be a little more populist, a little more. It's not the conservative ideology, but instead, which is in part conservative, but it's pro America or pro whatever benefits Americans.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think anytime you look at these polls, there is a certain component of people that just do not want to deal with the headache of telling somebody they're right. Voting for President Trump. They don't want the blowback. They don't want the response that comes from that. They just, it's that silent majority that everybody talks about. They will get out there and they will vote, but they're not going to take the time and listen to a poll and push a number and do all the stuff that goes on.
Yeah, and it's a time suck, or you somebody calls you up and asks you who you're voting for. Anybody that raise any red flags, a little suspicious of that? I think that is certainly something how many times have you ever been called by a pollster?
Constantly. I guess just being involved in politics forever, you get them all the time. But I don't get any national politics. Like, I'll get some polls.
I guess it might be because we're in Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, they're
really in a state that's,
Everybody knows Alabama's going to go to red. Everybody knows those non-votes are going to go in Trump's column. Yeah. In November, so it's just they don't waste their time down here. We're in a weird market, though, being so close to Florida. Sometimes people will call the wrong number or do something like that.
Yeah, because the advertising bleeds over. Mobile being Pensacola and Florida, sometimes being a swing state, hasn't been as of late. Been solid Republican, but the Obama year certainly it was a blue state. For that matter, it's by virtue of that, it's I guess still a swing state. But the polling phenomenon, you would have thought that there would have been some kind of course correction, knowing what we know from 16. It doesn't seem like you still see kind of the same numbers we saw in 16 in these spreads.
And it's been the same response, and it's really awkward that they continue to have the same argument and the same push that I've seen. You have your Nate Silvers and your 538, and it's like they did not learn a single thing from 2016, and they're right here. You look in September of 2016, and it was a handover. It was going to be Clinton, and then they start the transition team already going into it, and it's the same situation here. I don't think anything's changed. I think you know, you talk about this Woodward book and you talk about some of this stuff, and I think the best phrase, and I think I got it from you, and I don't know if you got it from Dale Jackson or not, but it's baked into the cake. Everybody that is listening to Trump, everybody that votes for Trump is going to, they've already accounted for everything that they're talking about. You know, you look at what happened last night specifically with this Woodward book and this release. It makes Trump look presidential. When he comes out and he tries to calm the country down and say, look, we can get through this, it's not this. You know, if he gets on the radio, if he goes out on TV and he just says, oh my gosh, this is going to be horrible, well, then you have the market crash that goes through and it becomes much worse of a situation than it is already. You have to prepare. You have to show leadership. You have to have that ability to understand, let's calm the American public down and let's not freak the American public out. That's presidential. That's what you expect from somebody in that role.
But even if you think of it, and if you take it at face value, what the media are telling you, one, people just are going to discount it outright just because of, consider the source, right, or the way it's being portrayed. We've heard the audio, and the way it's being presented is Donald Trump is lied to the American public, whereas you listen to it, that's not exactly... You know, he's not hyping it up, and it seems reasonable when you listen to the audio, at least to me.
We've gone to this soundbite generation where they want to be able to quote Trump in something that can play on that 5-second clip to say this is what it is.
Right.
And I go back to, can you imagine during that 13 days of the Cuban Missile Crisis, if you had the media right now saying, how bad is it? How close is it? You know, they would say, no, we're trying to keep calm heads. We're trying to prevail. You don't get out there and tell the media the absolute worst case scenario. Good leadership and good government is you plan for the worst, but you don't present that out there in the media and throw everything out there that way.
I mean, just look at, if that were the case, all these terrorist threats and anything you could think of, we'd be in a constant state of panic in America, which is, you know, if you want to look at past presidents and the way they handle these situations, they weren't out sounding the alarm every intelligence report that told them that this is potential threat to the security of the United States.
No, and you look at the way things go and the way the stories went back at the time in March, and they, you know, he gets attacked for acting like it's not a big deal. Well, he doesn't care. He's stupid. He doesn't know these deals. He's not paying attention to the news. He doesn't listen to his briefings. He's an idiot. And then they find out, no, he knew all this stuff. He just decided to make this decision for the best interest of the country. And now it's like, oh, well, he lied to us. And it's, he didn't lie. He just didn't make us panic on what we're looking at.
I don't think people are as simple as the media and these Democrat operatives think they are, that they could take something and make it so narrow and make that the talking point when it's much broader than that. And I you know, you see this over and over again, and it goes to the Trump phenomenon itself, that it's not just one reason people voted for Trump. There's not just one reason he has such broad support in Alabama. It's some people see it as a protest vote against the political establishment. Some people really believe in the immigration policy, really think a wall is the best approach, or maybe it just, well, it's not Hillary Clinton. Or there are a number of reasons, and the problem with the media, they try to boil it down to just one thing. This is what it is. We have figured it out. We have figured out the secret sauce. It's not that. It's not that simple. It's more complex than that.
It's more complex than that, and we're talking about a different time in communication as far as there's many more outlets. There's a 24/7 news cycle, so they have to keep something to keep their waves on internet going on and keep people, the eyeballs and the clicks going there. But we're also at a different time, and you have a candidate that can actually reach out to the public on his own. He doesn't need the media to get his message out across. You know, with Twitter and how he uses Twitter, and Lord knows I would hope he put it down sometimes, but at the end of the day, he gets to use his message to get out what he wants to the American public. No president has ever been able to do that without having to have it filtered to go through, hey, let's go through this news source, or we need this reporter to say this, or we'll sit down for this interview. Now he can just get it out on himself.
And it really hasn't been in some ways it is an Achilles heel and it's causing problems, but if Donald Trump goes down, it's not going to be because of Twitter. So, you know, make of it what you will. Like you said, I think a lot of us agree with that maybe be a little more judicious, pick and choose your fights. Don't be live tweeting like CNN's primetime lineup, because only like a million people are watching that. It's irrelevant. But he's that is something where he's figured out a way to bypass these guys, and I think just they're not good with that, you know.
No, I mean, you know, you've taken out their business model. You've taken out their opportunity where you have to come in and kiss the ring and get the good spin and these puff pieces to talk about how wonderful you are and how great of a person you are. And that cycle of candidacy that, you know, he's had to go through, that, you know, that normal presidential route that you go through, he's just hadn't had to do that. He's been able to skip them, and I think people are just upset about that.
I agree with that. But, you know, there's also some of that is very off-putting. You know, make of that what you will. But I don't think there's a sizable amount of people, no matter what he tweets, that are just like they don't like him as a person. But it's, you know, he's still that person with or without the tweets. You know.
And I've had somebody that I highly respect when sit down and have this conversation and talk about it. And you know, they've said, if you go in with that mindset of you're expecting a Southern gentleman as the president, that's not what he is.
Right.
You know, that's your mold that you're putting onto him in that position. He is a New York businessman who does things the New York way. Whether we like that way or not, he's been effective at what he's doing. You look at the policies that have passed. You look at what's going on. I do think there's sometime a little bit of a pay attention to me the over here and pay no attention to what's actually going on policy-wise, because we don't want you attacking the policy. I think Trump takes a lot of that attack on himself intentionally. I think he takes those arrows and says, look, they can attack me this way for this reason, for personal, but look at what the legislation I'm passing. Look at what these orders are doing. Look at the economy. Look at some of the stuff. And if you look and separate just policies versus the persona, you know, policies, it's been incredible for us for the past 4 years.
Yeah, it's just that doesn't resonate as well. It's some of that's very complicated. I you know, it's hard to really capitalize on some of that. But it's how much of this is 3D chess, and how much is this just him being impulsive and, you know, giving the media free shots on goal? That's always been the question. But I will say this real quick about Donald Trump and, you know, what you were talking about. People expecting him to be kind of a role model and be on the up and up. I have always said evangelical Christians, at least, they're not voting for Trump because they see him as this person that would, you know, be a deacon in the church or whatever. It's far from that. He's a guy that's not going to come in and tell you he's not going to offend your sensibilities, and that he's going to tell you how you should worship, that you got to offer, if you work for a church, that the church has to offer you contraception, or you know, that you have to include, you have to believe certain things about the same-sex marriage. He's leaving the church alone, and that's what brings in that evangelical vote that I think is often misinterpreted, misunderstood, why he does so well with that crowd. It's just leave me alone and let me live my life, right?
I think that's very much part of it. It's very much part of let the church be the church. Don't let the government come in and take over the church and decide who has to be where and who has to be what within this church, within this religious perspective of it. I think that, you know, people all the time dance on that motto of separation of church and state. And, you know, I understand that perspective. I don't necessarily agree with it completely, but it has to work both ways. You can't have and say, well, the church has to stay out of our local and our state and our federal government. Well, then keep the federal government and local and state government out of our church. Make sure the churches have the ability to do the things that they can to worship that freedom of religion that we have and we cherish in the First Amendment so much.
Well, and I think the other component of that is Democrats aren't really offering, you know, they're not really offering an alternative there. I watch a lot of Morning Joe just because of my job, but they're like, oh, we just don't understand why evangelicals support Trump. Well, they're not going to support Trump. Who are they going to support? They're going to support a Democrat candidate that is, you know, way more ideologically on the left side of all these issues. Of course not.
The left has moved so far in the last 20 years, Jeff, that these elite don't understand how far that move is. Growing up, I did not watch The West Wing. I thought it was liberal propaganda, just thought all this stuff. You go back, and I've watched it now. I'm watching a series of, you know, on my second or third viewing of the West Wing episodes now. That president, President Bartlet, would never get elected in today's Democratic Party. He is not, he would be considered a Republican even on some of his views. You know, the stuff that they've gone is, they have been taken over and controlled by this far, far left-wing group, this Ocasio-Cortez, this Bernie Sanders. There's no middle ground where you can come in and say, hey, that's reasonable. You know, they've moved that far to the left, and I think there's a lot of the public that is saying, look, I don't agree with everything. I don't agree with everything President Trump says, but end of the day, that's closer to where I am than where this far left is. I mean, you look at this movement going on, these protests and this violence and these attacks that are going on. These are not, you know, these aren't middle ground people with middle ground thoughts. These are people that are want to come up. These are far leftists that want to take over and want to control our lives and put the government and make the government control all of these things.
Yeah, it's not recognizing that it's out of the mainstream, and it makes people uncomfortable. That's going to make them want to vote and go in another direction, I think. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back to wrap it all up. We got a few more moments remaining with State Representative Matt Simpson. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
On a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one can change my mind, but Mama tried.
They begin to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
We look down a river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton.
And welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5, 54 minutes after the hour. You want to stay tuned for my colleague Sean Sullivan's program coming up for Midday Mobile. Got Congressman Bradley Byrne and Robert Kennedy. You can hear him here on FM Talk 106.5 once a week. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Still with the State Representative Matt Simpson here in studio. Matt, I guess we haven't talked since the governor unveiled her prison proposal on air. You're a big believer in law and order and criminal justice. The system. What would you make of that prison proposal?
You know, I firmly believe we need more prisons in Alabama. We need to spend money to build more prisons in Alabama. I haven't seen enough of this proposal. There's so many questions that I have to ask that before I can decide where I stand on this. And, you know, you talk about where we are. We have 21,000 inmates currently in Alabama prison custody. We are going to build beds for 10,000 people. One facility is going to be 4,000. The other two facilities are going to be 3,000 beds. So that's 10,000 beds. You have 21,000 inmates and 10,000 beds. Where are these other 11,000 people are going to go? If your savings are going to be made because you're going to close down prisons, well, okay, well, if you have to keep some open for these 11,000, and does that mean you don't have as much savings as you're talking about? Where's the money going to come from that you're talking, because you're not going to be able to just have 21,000 people fit into a 10,000 person bed. That's just not going to happen. And that's part of the reason the DOJ is on top of us. Now, for overcrowding, for stuff that we're looking into, we're supposed to build to advance more beds. Part of the problem I have and the concern I have is, are we getting into a 30-year lease very similar to this toll bridge where we're saying you can't compete and you don't have any other new prisons in Alabama for the next 30 years, so we're locked into 10,000 beds for the next 30 years? I have extreme concerns about that. I have concerns about, you know, what happens if 10 years down the line when KIV or whoever is in the governor's office, who's not in the governor anymore, and they say, yeah, we need to renegotiate the terms of this lease, and we've got all these prisoners there, and we're not ready, we don't have anywhere to put them. We're stuck at the mercy of these independent contractors, these private companies, to say, we can raise your rates for whatever we want to raise you, because a nightmare you'd have to do to build three new prisons in 30 days or whatever you'd have to do for the contract. The devil's in the details on some of this stuff, Jeff, and we haven't seen any of the details. I'm blessed in the fact that my district, I don't have to fight to try to get a prison in my district, so I'm not hearing the fight about where they're going to go or how that stuff goes. That doesn't concern me. What concerns me is making sure the state as a whole is taken care of and is not put in a rough spot just because we're trying to agree to this prison system. But I firmly agree with her. We do need to build prisons. Everybody, I think, understands we need to build prisons. I want to see the full details on the proposal before I'm going to say, yes, I support this, or no, I don't.
And it's always been my contention that, look, law and order is the theme of the movement right now on the Republican side. You can't have law and order without a sound criminal justice system. You can't have a sound criminal justice system without a viable prison system, which is going to have to be fixed at some point. Folks, we have got to get out of here. We'll do it all again tomorrow. Make sure you tune in. This has been the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.